the players spoke and were heard? And why the NBA tossing up goose eggs is actually a good thing today. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. And we are getting closer and closer. Yesterday felt like one of those rare good days where we got a lot of news out of the world of sports. Everyone getting closer and closer to getting back, working together, and actually trying to make this thing work for a 2020 season, all in pursuit of some rings. But 2020 on a Monday in the Golic House had a bit of a different tenor for that same reason. As Dad, you crossed the finish line on a major milestone yesterday.
Yes, yes, I did. Listen, we got a lot to talk about today. A lot of great guests. We're going to set up some of the NBA teams as well that are getting ready to play in the bubble come July 30th. But it was a big night in the Golic House. Listen, when I started this show in 1998 with Tony Bruno, I think you were nine.
Ten.
You were born in 89. You were going to be 10. Jake was going to be 9, and Sydney was going to be 5. That's when this show started so long ago. And the one thing I always wanted to do is really involve my family in the show over the years, what turned out to be a couple of decades worth of time. And you got to kind of know the family and know the kids as they grew up to the point now where, you know, from a work aspect, the greatest thing is to be able to work with your kid like I get to work with Mike. But the personal things as well, we've seen over 3 years ago, Jake get engaged to his college sweetheart, Jenny, and they've been married just over 3 years now, just had their anniversary July 15th. And my youngest, Sydney, had been dating a young man named Ben Broniker, who went to Harvard, played football there. He's a tight end on the roster for the Chicago Bears, been playing there for the last 4 years. And whenever that ends, he is going to go to medical school to become an infectious disease doctor.
Still I can't figure out what he's doing with all of us here.
I know. So under that kind of guy and getting to know our family, last night, Ben popped the question to Sydney. He wanted to go to a place he'd first gone here in Connecticut with Sydney when he first came to Connecticut and kind of lured her back there yesterday, last evening, and he popped the question to her. And yes, a couple of months ago, he did ask permission.
This is a big thing that people still ask if it was a thing or not.
Well, you know, we talk about some old school things that are still good, and I do think this is one that is still good. This was actually back in February. When he and I had a moment alone, he talked about and asked if it would be okay to ask Sydney to marry him. So we had a great discussion there. He's a wonderful young man, wonderful family as well. So we all knew it. There was a whole ring thing, you know.
Yeah, it was a very coordinated effort on
this
one.
It really was, and it worked out well. He did a masterful job with the engagement, unlike mine, which was the worst of all time, and we'll kind of set our social media play to that today. But last night, so Jake and Jenny drove in from Boston knowing that this was going to happen, and the only one who didn't know was Sydney, and she was obviously surprised, obviously said yes, obviously cried a lot. And whenever that wedding is going to be, could it finally be the day when she is off my credit card?
Yeah, no, I still highly doubt that. There are only more expenses in your future as
that's
going to
be expensive
for the Golic wedding event here.
Congrats to them. Yeah. It was a great celebration last night, so I may be a little rough this morning.
Yeah, exactly. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio again. Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. here. The newly engaged Sydney Golic still asleep somewhere in the home right now. So big congrats to her and Ben on that news. We'll have plenty more updates on that as they wake up. And still, hopefully, Ben will be humbled enough in all of this to still maybe offer to go get us coffee.
Yeah, exactly right.
That was a big fight yesterday. Now, what we thought was going to be a big fight in the NFL turned out to actually go a lot easier than expected in all of this. Over the course of yesterday, remember, we had talked about leading up a lot of the hurdles still left for the NFL to climb in order to get to an agreement with the players and get to a season in all of this. Well, we seem to have come a long way in a short time. The NFL, in addition to announcing that COVID testing would be daily for the first 2 weeks of training camp leading up, also announced that one of the other hurdles, the preseason games. Last night, Adam Schefter reported that the NFL had offered the players a proposal of no preseason games, which had been a big hangup for them.
Yeah, it has. And George Atala, the NFLPA's assistant executive director of External Affairs, which is looks good on a business card.
Good Lord.
He did tweet. He said, listen, this was not, when it came out yesterday where the players obviously en masse tweeted the star players to try and have their voice heard, and they didn't want preseason games, and the NFL talked about two preseason games. George is saying in here, he said, the NFL didn't offer or give up preseason games for us, the union. He's saying they had the right to choose or not under the CBA already. Now, whether you want to believe that or not, or that's just kind of talking nice now that they figured everything out, either way, it doesn't matter. There's going to be no preseason games, which I guess is good and bad. It's a shorter ramp-up period to the season, but, man, as I've talked about, I was a player that needed some hitting, needed to kind of hit a different color jersey for a while, go full goal a little bit, because you can go full goal all you want in practice. It's still not a game, and I know preseason games can be a bit of a joke, but I thought they could have been important this year, and, man, for young teams, it's going to be brutal. Young quarterbacks, brutal. You know, in the amount of, we're talking 14, basically in the ramp-up period, 14 padded practices. So you have a new coach and or a young quarterback and or a young team, just 14 padded practices to be ready. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like college again. You know preseason, you're right into a game that counts.
Yeah, now we had talked about that is what the players had wanted in there. The NFL has offered for a longer ramp-up period. No word on the specifics of that at this point as far as I've read. But you're not the only one that's concerned from the player side. Our own Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL Insider, was on SportsCenter last night and said coaches are echoing that sentiment.
Coaches. Those are the ones that are really stressed about this no preseason situation if this were to be agreed upon, because we know so many players on this roster show themselves in those games, and guys that maybe they didn't notice in practice are showing themselves in those game-like scenarios. I had one coach I texted with who said, well, no preseason games means camp is going to be a lot more physical because we need live action reps out here to just get our guys ready. So, yes, there are definitely some positives from the players here and maybe even some disadvantages for the players that are trying to make these rosters, but coaches definitely want those preseason games to go through those dress rehearsals.
I think this will end up being a good thing because it rewards the best of the best, and it rewards people that are willing to think outside the box a little bit here. You remember going back when the Seahawks really first started having success, one of the things that we talked about as the NFL's rules changes was, well, the Seahawks were early to that rugby-style tackling,
right,
the way
right.
that they went about their business there. And so when the NFL implemented rule changes, the Seahawks were a lot less affected by those things. They were ready to go in the lead up to that. You're going to get teams now that are better at manufacturing game-like scenarios in practice, manufacturing environments you can control, which is why they started to love those joint practices with other teams so much, because you can control the situations and find a way to be creative with your work and still get it in there right now. And so I think what you'll see is the teams that are, you know, quality coaches, quality staffs, and quality organizations are going to continue to separate for all these reasons because they've probably been trending in directions like this more and more as is.
And you heard in there where coaches said, well, camp's going to be more physical. Well, it can only be so physical. Remember, the new CBA, you can't go back-to-back two-a-day. So these guys can't put on pads in the morning and then put on pads in the afternoon. So losers here are going to be back-end roster guys and depth, right? I mean, because if you're truly...
And both lines of scrimmage.
Without question, that is going to get... So there may be some positive here, but there's going to be some negatives. But that's going to be this year. It's just a shame, or it's a shame. It's just bad that it happens in a physical sport like football because it's going to lead to injury. There is no doubt about that more than any other sport. This is going to lead to injury. It's going to lead to teams that don't have as much depth. It's going to lead to teams that just aren't as well prepared, and they're going to need those first couple games more than ever, the first couple real games, to really kind of start to hit their stride.
Injury is certainly going to be a big concern there. One of the other biggest concerns for all sports coming back was testing. And coming up next, what the NFL might be able to learn from the NBA about a successful return to the field on that front. Mike Golic Jr. And it's time for some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, because yesterday was chock full in the good news department.
Yes, it was.
Listen, we always, I think, default to health and safety when it comes to a lot of what's going on in here. And yesterday, after hearing from Freddie Freeman over the weekend and his press conference of just how serious it can get, you understand that any news along the lines like we're going to give is great news. And the NBA had some of it yesterday. The NBA, in its last round of testing, so as of July 20th on yesterday, tested 346 players inside of the bubble. Zero positive tests over the course of that. So a huge moment for them in this.
Yeah, remember the last time they tested, July 13th, 322 players or had the massive test to come back with two positives, and those two were not yet all the way inside the bubble. They were quarantining right on the outside before they got in. So they're doing a heck of a job, because remember, we call it a bubble, but a lot call it a mesh hat, because there are people coming in and out, workers that are coming in and out that need to be there for the players. But they are doing such a good job testing, and you have to give the players credit for social distancing, wearing masks, and doing what they're doing or what everybody's doing to stay healthy, you know, and to have those negative tests. So that gives you great peace of mind, especially now when you're playing. Now you're playing, and basketball can certainly be a contact sport. There's no doubt about that. But it's good to know when you're going on the court, you're going against other people that you know have tested negative.
Exactly. And I think you mentioned it. It's the whole process in there. It's all of the things. And we've seen, because of some players that have been willing to give us some behind the scenes because of the great work of our reporting crew down there, what's been going on behind the scenes. And even the use of, I know it was called the snitch line to begin with, and we tried to dub it.
Right.
The health heroes line never took off, which I understand. It's a really bad nickname.
Wasn't demeaning enough.
But it's the idea that everyone's policing one another on this, that accountability for this specific thing is going to be what allows them to go. But make no mistake, the main thing is the main thing. And our own Malika Andrews, ESPN NBA reporter, was on SportsCenter last night and said the key is exactly what you would expect.
It's that daily testing. Every single day, players head to a room in their hotel and are given two nasal swabs and as well as an oral swab. And every day, they are getting those results back, to the point that players who they've caught, they started this testing 2 weeks before players needed to come down and report to Orlando. They have caught COVID cases so that those players have not entered the bubble and then potentially given it to other people. So it just came out today. I reported earlier that Pat Connaughton with the Milwaukee Bucks tested positive for COVID-19. He is not in Orlando because of that. Eric Bledsoe, also on the Bucks, not in Orlando yet because of that. Russell Westbrook just got to Orlando because he had tested positive for coronavirus, he shared. So that precaution has really been exceptional from the NBA so far.
Listen, it's worked. And they start playing these. Each team will play three inter-squad scrimmages from July 22nd, July 28th. And we know the season starts July 30th. But this is working. It is working in the NBA. It's working in the bubble. Now, one of the big differences for the NFL is they're not in a bubble. You know, and that's one of the reasons that the NFL players were talking about testing every day, because after practice, they're going home. They're in their community. Everybody is, all, you know, 90 people. You know, I know some will all be together in a hotel, but some will be going home until the rosters are cut down. So there's it's a little more unnerving. I certainly would be a little more unnerved by it unless I was in a bubble, as opposed to being home where you're exposed to a lot more.
Well, I think there's a higher degree of importance in all that. For the NBA, we understand absolutely being able to feel comfortable going out on the court. But like you said, for the NFL players, the NBA players, remember, their families can't show up until we get into September and we start getting closer.
The first round of the playoffs.
And with that, but the NFL players are, in theory, unless they choose to quarantine away from their families, which is still a conversation to be had, are going to be dealing with much more. That's why they wanted the daily testing that they're now going to get for the first 2 weeks of camp. But our own ESPN NFL insider Dan Graziano was on ESPN Radio Afternoon and talked about why the NFL on the other side originally pushed back on that.
I actually asked an owner last week, like, what is the reason not to do daily testing? And his answer was, it's not, their medical people are saying it's not necessary. They can actually lead to a false sense of security. And they are conscious of not wanting to take up too high a percentage of the testing resources in a given market, right? Like, if the NFL players can get tests, but you and I can't, that's gonna not play well in the public, right? So they want to make sure and be responsible too. So that was their answer. I mean, if cost is an issue, then cost is an issue. They're not going to tell me that necessarily, but those were the reasons I was given for why they were pushing back on daily testing.
So again, the testing that's going on is, after for the first 2 weeks, they'll be tested every single day. After those 2 weeks, if the rate is below 5%, they'll scale back to testing every other day. If it's not below 5%, they'll continue to test every day until it gets below 5%.
Yeah, so that seems like it's going to be the threshold. Although Dr. Sills, the NFL's health and safety official in this situation, said that he considers this a living, breathing document when it comes to the health and safety protocols. They're going to go and continue to adjust based off what they learn. And I think that's important relative to the NBA conversation in this, because I wonder now, and they mentioned not wanting to take resources away from other people. You saw some tweets about the NFL going with the lab they did, a national lab, to try and curb that. Testing feels like a zero-sum game. This is an area where we've seen there are still plenty of labs locally around the country that are experiencing big delays in the turnaround on some of these tests that affect the general public in this, but because we know these leagues are willing to pay a premium, they're likely going to get to cut to the front of the line.
And also, I had talked about, are these going to be rapid response tests? And it looks like they're going to be tests so you find out in 24 hours. Maybe not. Maybe they'll have somewhere the 15 minutes, but for the most part, the 24 hours, and we're talking about, it looks like the numbers in the area of 5,800 tests per day. And then a 24-hour period, and the lab is BioReference Laboratories doing this.
The same one doing the NBA.
Doing the NBA, and that is a concern. You know, now, listen, when I was in South Bend at Notre Dame, and then had to go see my mom after she had a procedure, I needed to kind of get a quick response, quite honestly, so I could go see her. And again, she is fine. I was able to, there was one place there where everybody there found out in 15 minutes. You know, you waited in line, you gave your info, you took the test, you found out 15 minutes later. But they're not all like that. There was a number of places you could get tests, but this was the one where you could get the quick response. The others, you would have to wait the 24 hours or longer for it. So that is the biggest concern, is you don't want to take resources away from the general public. And I'm not, I don't have enough knowledge to know if that's happening or not, because I know there are a lot of tests available now. Is this doing that? Is this taking a resource away? I don't know that. And I know that's something that definitely professional sports teams need to take into consideration.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. There is a moral element to this. Yeah. We saw the NBA getting, Tom Haverstraw, I believe, was the one, wrote a great piece on that and how it affected the NBA as they headed into their bubble. But coming up next, we'll have the chance to talk to someone who has been involved in all these key conversations around the NFL and try and get some answers on a couple more teams that said they would be going on without fans yesterday, as well as some of those key hangups when it comes to the NFL and their access to testing. Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Got a lot of great ones coming up this morning. Bomani Jones going to join us at 7:30 Eastern. Brian Windhorst at 8:30. Booger McFarland at 9 o'clock. Plus, because we've got the NBA starting to ramp back up, zero positive tests again for the NBA inside the bubble yesterday out of 346 tested. Exhibition games are going to start, I believe, between the 22nd and the 28th before the actual return on the 30th. So we're starting your NBA preview, reminding you where everybody left off before we entered into quarantine, before we got to the bubble and all this. Give a refresher course there. But we've had the good news of the day. My sister Sydney engaged to her longtime boyfriend Ben Broniker, mm-hmm. so now fiance Ben Broniker in this, and he pulled off the proposal really well in this
great
one.
Job.
You not so much back in the day. We got to relive this the other day. Just give everyone a quick refresher of exactly how badly you botched the proposal to my dear sweet mother.
My proposal was horrible. I met Chris, and she lived in Chicago, and I flew to Chicago to see her. But prior to that, I called her before I left and actually said to her over the phone, "I have the ring.
I have the ring. Do you want to see what it looks like?"
I mean, well, this was over the phone, so I knew she couldn't see what it looks like, but I told her I had the ring. Why I did that, I have no idea. So she picked me up at the airport, and we went right to a concert, a Michael Stanley Band concert. Actually, he was opening for Jack Wagner. Now I'm really showing my age. This is in Chicago. Yeah, how about it? This is in Chicago. We were actually in the parking lot before we walked into the concert. She knew I had the ring. I had told her I had the ring. So there was zero anticipation by me of actually surprising her and asking her to marry me. So basically, that's when I said, you just want to see the ring, you know, and it was,
dear God,
it was awful.
Every time I cringe.
It was awful. We went in, talked to Michael Stanley and those guys for a little bit, and then we left. We didn't stay for the concert. And the further I got removed from that moment, the more I just thought how horrific that was and what a poor job I did in every aspect that could be.
So Ben pulled it off. My dad
did a great job.
Not so much in this situation. So at Golic and Wingo, we're asking for bad proposal stories all morning. Little teaser here. Stacey Lynn Moon said Civil War reenactment. I figured he was going to ask at the dance. Didn't ask. Kept not asking. Finally, we went for a walk. Dark. No moon. Middle of a field. He asked, then couldn't get the ring off of the string he'd tied it around. It all worked out.
Oh, my gosh.
So, an absolute nightmare on that one. Keep those coming. We will get back to that this morning, as certainly we're talking about my sister getting engaged, your daughter, because, hell, it was a hell of a Monday for us. But the NFL offering the players zero preseason games is what everybody is talking about. What everyone's talking about is brought to you by 303 Touch the Sealant for ultimate protection and shine in no time. 303 Touchless Sealant. So now, for more on that, we welcome in our ESPN NFL insider, Dan Graziano. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing well, but that truly is a terrible story. And I don't know, it's depressing. You really should make something up, I think, and tell a false story instead of that one. Because there's got to be a better way.
What I'm trying to do, Dan, is because I thought of that. I thought of lying my way through this. But then I thought, you know what? I'm going to tell the story of a horrible engagement, but we've been married for 33 years.
Yeah,
so, and I have three, you know, decent kids. So it's kind of worked out. So I guess so I'm going
that route.
There's
some evidence that you really did do it the right way. That's a good point. All right. Well, I take it back then. I apologize.
You know what? Now that we've gotten and settled through that one here, we can proceed forward amicably. So Dan Graziano with us. Dan, you've been as dialed into all of this back and forth between the NFL and the NFLPA in this entire process. And so I'm curious, as you went along here, what seemed like the tougher concession as the NFL has offered the players, as we heard reported yesterday, no preseason games, as well as daily testing through the first two leagues of this. So were these difficult concessions for the NFL after the outpouring of tweets that we saw from the players this weekend?
Yeah, I think it gets back to what we were talking about. To go back, it was really only like 4 or 5 months. We were talking about CBA talks between these same two groups. And, it's give and take, and it's collective bargaining, and it's negotiation. And, you know, if you do it if you cover it like a horse race, then it looks like, oh, somebody gave something just at the end. I think it's been a pretty productive conversation between the two sides that seems to be landing in a good place on the health and safety thing. We'll see what happens with the money. But the big thing as of Sunday, when you saw all those players tweeting about NFL's ignoring its own medical advice, they're talking about this ramp-up period when they get to training camp. They want 21 days of just strength and conditioning, 10 days of non-padded practices before they get into the contact phase. So the players were having a hard time getting the league to agree to that. And the preseason thing is tied up in that, because if you think about it, they were going to play two preseason games. Every time you play a preseason game, that's 3 days where you don't practice, because you don't practice the day before or the day after or the day of the game. So if you want to implement this long ramp-up period, the preseason games are kind of in the way of that when you talk about the overall time they had. So agreeing to the longer ramp-up period, which it seems like the league is doing, and then getting rid of the preseason games, it kind of goes hand in hand. So they've gotten to this point. It hasn't been easy. It's taken longer than a lot of people are comfortable with. And there still is a fight coming over the money, over what happens to the salary cap next year as a result of lost revenue this year and that kind of stuff. So it's always difficult with these two sides. We saw it in baseball. It got painfully difficult there. The players have a union that can fight for their rights, and because of that, they don't have to just take what the NFL gives them, and we get to see behind the curtain sometimes, and it does seem like it's a little bit dicey.
As far as the money, Dan, what's interesting, baseball players weren't stepping on the field until they had that part of it worked out. It seems, or you correct me if I'm wrong, that they're going to kind of work out the financial part along the way, or is that something that has to be done before the 28th?
It has to be done, at least the opt-out portion of it has to be done relatively soon. Because if a player decides he doesn't want to go to camp, he wants to opt out of the season, for medical reasons or because he's not comfortable with the setup with the virus still present, then they're going to have to be able to tell that player, here's what happens to your contract. It's going to toll and just pick up again where we are next year. You're just going to get a year off from it, or it pays this much, and then you have to take this much off the next year. They have to work that part out. But the big picture thing that I was referring to earlier in terms of how much revenue are they going to lose in 2020 as a result of empty stadiums, as a result of, you know, if games do end up having to be canceled at some point, and then how does that affect the salary cap going forward? That may be something that takes a while because as long as they have the individual opt-out thing in place, they can get on the field without that. So where that lands is going to be a matter of really how many years they decide they want to spread the pain out over. Like, the owners want to take a big hit right now, drop the salary cap next year, and then go right back up to the salary cap growth we've been used to in 2022. And the players are saying, well, big picture maybe, but in terms of the current players, it's really going to affect a lot of guys. A lot of guys are going to get cut. So they would rather spread it out over a number of years, and they're having a negotiation really over basically how many years that ends up being. So that could take a little while, but I think the next thing you'll see is once this is all official, all the stuff that happened last night, I think you'll see an agreement on the opt-out procedures for if a guy, you know, if his doctor tells him you really shouldn't play because you have this and this pre-existing condition, or if he decides that he's just not comfortable playing and he wants to take the year off.
Talking to Dan Graziano, our ESPN NFL insider there, a couple of the big hurdles left to go, but one of the other things that was talked about a lot of this in addition to the preseason games was daily testing for the players being a big deal, and they're going to get that for the first 2 weeks, and then after that it's going to potentially adjust depending on that 5% positivity rate threshold. I'm curious, how adjustable do you think that's going to be going forward, especially when the NFL looks over and sees a league like the NBA, who has been going with daily testing in a bubble, having so much success with their process?
The hope is that it'll be something like what we've seen in the NBA, and more specifically, actually, a Major League Baseball, which doesn't have a bubble system, but whose testing numbers last week were very encouraging. They had actually come out with they'd released some testing numbers on Friday afternoon, right before I had a conversation with someone on the ownership side in the NFL who referenced that, saying, you know, that tells us a lot because these are guys that are going home to their families, are interacting with other people away from the facility. And that if those testing numbers can go down, that gives us some encouragement because that's going to be the situation in the NFL. You're going to continue to hear the NFL and the NFLPA preach to the players and to the team employees and everybody, when you go home, it's on you. If you bring this thing back into a team facility and there's a widespread infection, that's going to hurt everybody. It could end up, you know, shutting down the league again. So everyone's going to have to be on their best behavior in terms of how they manage the virus and the ability to transmit it when they're away from the facility. So that's the big question the NFL is facing. They think when they're in their buildings, they're going to be okay because the incredible amount of work that's been done to set the buildings up in terms of, you know, disinfecting them and social distancing and all the stuff that's going to go on from right down to how packages are handled when they're delivered to the facility, to how the cafeterias are set up. They think when you're in the building, you're going to be safe. When you go outside the building, that's when they don't have any way to really track you, and it's on you to make sure that you act in a safe manner and come back without a high risk of the virus.
And obviously, Dan, numbers play a part here. The more players that are there, the more chance and risk you have of them going home and coming back, the more opportunity, unfortunately, for the coronavirus to be found and or spread. Is the 90-man roster still in place? Is there still a thought of going with less in this? How is that working?
You know, it's funny. That is a question that came up last night, and I realized that we don't, in all of this, we had been focused on that early, and we don't have an answer to yet. So hopefully we figure that out today. I had been told to expect smaller rosters in training camp because of the way the facilities have to be set up in terms of, you know, space between lockers, et cetera. So that is definitely something that's come up. There's been some pushback from coaches and GMs, so I don't know where the number will settle. But I would be surprised if it's 90. Probably more like something like in the 70s or 80. And then you will see probably, ironically, larger rosters effectively during the season because the teams are going to want to have these sort of taxi squads available to them in case a number of guys test positive on a given weekend. So that, I guess that they still haven't, nothing's come out about that, even in all the flurry of news last night. So maybe that's part of what we find out today and tomorrow.
And roster size and flexibility is going to be one thing, but the other part that had still been brought up was flexibility potentially with the schedule. Sean McVay had said that he's skeptical the NFL is going to start on time. Has there been any talk of the possibility of pushing back the start date of the NFL season?
Did McVay say season or training camp? Because I think I'm trying to, because everybody, there's so much flying around. I think he said trade, because they're talking about training camp dates right now. There are teams that are trying to talk about when we get guys in and all that kind of stuff. So in terms of the season, I mean, that may be tied to the start of training camp because, you know, the longer that it would get pushed back, then the longer they might have to push back the start of the season. But if they're able to start camp in the next couple of weeks and they're able to get through camp without a huge spike in positive cases and people contracting the virus, then I think the expectation is they will be able to start the season on time. I know there are coaches that are concerned about not having enough time to get ready, but the message is going to continue to be, hey, it's not a normal year. You have to adjust. I was texting with one head coach the other night saying, boy, this is going to be something. And he said, look, the best prepared teams are going to be the ones that win. And all I'm waiting for is the rules so they can tell me how to build my training camp schedule around those. I think that's the right mentality. And the more coaches that take that approach, I think the better that they'll be.
Yeah, his quote was, something about it tells me maybe there's a chance things get moved back. And that's what's weird, because you want to make sure, hey, if we're going, we're ready to roll, we're locked in.
It was in reference to training camp.
So. But if training camp gets pushed back enough, that certainly could go to the season. All right,
yeah, exactly.
Real quick, Dan, I want to ask, away from the health and safety of players, which is the most important thing, I have to ask this question because I read it and I just went, huh? Patrick Mahomes signed that 12-year deal or 10-year extension and could make over $500 million. And after he signed it, he texts Chris Jones, but this was before Chris Jones got his deal done. He texts Chris Jones and said, let's get this thing done. I left some money on the table for you. What? I mean, did Patrick Mahomes leave money on the table in this deal?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he didn't max out. I mean, like, first of all, you're 24 years old and you're as good as he is. You're going to give your team 12 years of control over your income. I think that's kind of nuts. But as great as the numbers sound, you know, the full guarantee at signing is $63 million thereabouts. The signing bonus was $10 million. I mean, Russell Wilson's signing bonus was $65 million when he signed his contract last year. I mean, the numbers sound great, and they get huge toward the end, but over the first 5 years, it's $183 million. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not, you know, it's not a lot more on average than Russell Wilson makes. So, you know, he didn't in any way that affects the Chiefs' short-term budgeting blow out the budget. By the time Chris Jones needs another contract, Patrick Mahomes will not have cost the Chiefs a crazy amount of money. It's the second half of that contract where the numbers get insane. And at that point, I think, you know, it probably won't be the highest paid quarterback number anymore. So he did leave some on the bone. He did for Chris Jones. And I think that's why the deal got done. There were 2 years left on Patrick Mahomes' contract. If the Chiefs were going to do a deal now, it was going to be one that helped them. And I think that's what we saw.
Prayers up for Patrick on that one.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. You know what? The first world problems, right? Like, yeah, only 183 in 5 years. Yeah.
Follow him on Twitter at Dan Graziano, ESPN. He's been nails on everything surrounding this ramp up back to the NFL season. Dan, thanks, we appreciate Dan. The time.
Thank you, guys.
You know, I knew from the money side it was, but I figured people wanted to hear Dan explain it. And just that line. He signed for over $400 million, and I left some money on the table for you.
Must be nice. Golic and Wingo is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as the big carriers, only pay up to 50% less, and get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G, for just $45 a month, only at Walmart. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. It is Golic and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests like Dan Graziano join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. So we've got all that going on in the world of professional sports, and
right.
It's been a very different world, but one that seems to be progressing in the right direction. This is sort of the exact opposite out of college football yesterday. We talked so much about the need for players to start to voice their opinions and the use of social media and that. I think the importance of that got underscored a lot more with some news yesterday out of Iowa. We're going to have Bomani Jones on in a little under an hour now to talk some about those power dynamics that have been at play here. But a Kansas City law firm was hired by Iowa, currently investigating the allegations that were made by former Iowa football players that we saw this summer against their former strength coach now,
right.
Some of the other coaches on the staff. But Kirk Ferentz's name has, you know, it was
him
under,
and his son, yes.
His son's name was brought up. Kirk Ferentz was just brought under fire because he's the head of that program. Well, HawkeyeNation.com obtained a document that gave clear indications that greater change was needed some time ago here. There was a diversity task force comprised of 9 University of Iowa employees who conducted interviews in the fall of 2018 and created a 9-page report outlining some of the very same complaints that we heard this summer about the lack of diversity within the program, the treatment of African-American players relative to their white counterparts, and just in general, the culture that had been brought up there. And this was a quote from last week of Kirk Ferentz, because those findings had come up and they had made some small cosmetic changes to that. But here was the quote from Kirk Ferentz talking about the task force findings in 2019, which in the changes included, among other things, allowing players to wear hats and earrings inside of the facility. He said, quote, "They appeared in my mind to be significant, the changes. And I think players were happy with the changes we made. I think we did what we did was good. I'll give you full disclosure on this. I dropped the ball because I talked to the group about coming back for a follow-up meeting, either the bye week or right after the season. And in December, I failed to do that." So you look at this situation now and say, all right, for like Iowa was given word internally through this that they had issues relative to all the problems that we heard players past and present voice for the Hawkeyes.
And it wasn't all just about wearing hats and being able to have your earrings in.
No, even I say, even though those tend to be racially coded things when their rules put in, it was a lot more than that. And this report had a lot more than that in there, which is to say they knew about this in their own building. And it was so important to everybody involved that they made those one or two tweaks and then forgot to address it.
They tried to handle this thing internally. They did a few cosmetic things to handle it internally, and then they just let it go. That's basically what happened.
And they forgot about it until they were pressed from the outside. And that to me was the reminder of why social media, and Dad, I know this is the conversation you and I have had a lot about airing things out on social media like this.
Yes.
This is why, especially for college players, that is a weapon going forward. And it's one that, by the way, at Iowa, for a long time, their social media policy was you had none. You didn't tweet. You weren't on there. You had no recourse like this. And now you see any meaningful change that was going to come after this, and we've seen the committee that's going to be headed up by Mike Daniels and some other former players on this, more things being pushed for on this, including Chris Doyle, their strength coach, was fired in all this. Now he got a healthy severance package.
Yes, he did.
That.
And his son was on the team, and he transferred away.
But it underscores the importance of players having this weapon to make sure that their voice is heard, because if they go through the normal protocols, we saw an example of what happens.
It's one of the many things I learn over the changing times and what becomes popular out there. And I do see that, because I see what things, especially that I went through and even after me, things that happen that just get buried, that get talked about internally, that say, yeah, we see, and then we'll take care of it. We'll pat you on the back, head out the door, and then basically it disappears, unless it's now brought up and everybody can kind of see what's going on. The curtain is pulled away. I do see the benefit of that.
That threat of force there is getting things done on the college ranks. Much more on that later on in the show when Bomani Jones will get ready to join us. But coming up here now, voters need to make a decision on who the MVP is in the NBA. So how easy is that choice? We'll get to that next. It's Golic and Wingo here on ESPN Radio and ESPN News.